Hello.
Hey.
So we are back.
Yes.
We continue to be back. It's officially June. Like, we are in June. How do you feel about that?
We're in there. I'm still reeling from last week's show, man. That was a deep, good show.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm like three listens in at this point.
Yeah. This is a conversation that we've been having for some time. So I think we're excited that this is the first time we've really breached it on our podcast. This won't be the last that you hear of it. We still actually have to finish up last week's episode.
Yes.
Because we just kind of kept going and there's so much more to go. But seems like people were really responsive to last week's episode.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I'm excited about June because the weather is getting to the point where I feel a lot better about going outside and sunbathing.
Good, because Memorial Day weekend for us was whack.
Yeah,
the weather was
not good.
Whack. It was cold. It was rainy.
Yeah.
It wasn't any of the things that I was hoping for.
Yo, I did learn something, though,
okay,
this past week. Did you know that Memorial Day was started by Black people?
I did learn that, yes.
Did you just learn it, like, in 2021, or you knew it from way back?
Not 2021, but not way back. So I knew it like 2020, maybe 2019.
Yeah. So the story is that there were some Union soldiers who had been inadvertently buried in a Confederate grave. And some Black soldiers dug them up to give them a proper burial. And then they had a big parade.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. I feel, you know, what's crazy is like Black people have such a connection to the history of this country that just gets overlooked. Because I Googled it. I went and looked in a few different places, and it's like no one really knows how it started.
Is it overlooked? I don't think it's overlooked. To me means it just so happened to happen. Like, was it completely covered up? I think that's probably what it is. Like, it's just been whitewashed. Yeah.
Covered up?
Yeah, completely covered up. Like, no, it's ours now.
But they'd rather be like nobody knows how it started than actually giving credit for how it started.
Christopher Columbus-esque. Like, hey, we found it this way. We've been doing this holiday forever now.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how it started, but it's ours.
They went so far as to, I think it's like in the 60s, they like restarted it and said, officially, this is the birthplace of it. It's like in New York, like nowhere near where the actual birthplace actually was. So that's how history gets revised.
Revised. Stolen. The lies come
I'm trying
to
be
front.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know why. But so last week we talked about the 100-year anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre.
Which is a horrible anniversary.
Horrible anniversary. And we also brought to light Generation Zero.
Absolutely. And it's part, this conversation, again, we kicked it off because of Tulsa. Like, it's the perfect, you know, emblematic example of the challenges that we as a Black people have endured in our journey for creating any kind of wealth. You know, we had to struggle through not just the end of slavery, but through an incredible oppression that happened, a destruction of any progress that we made. And then people look at us and say, well, why is there a wealth gap?
What's your problem?
Why don't y'all try
Pull yourself harder? Up by your bootstraps.
We have no boots and we have no straps.
Stop complaining about the past.
Yeah. Yeah, this past is not that old.
It's not that far.
I was listening to Sean's show this week also. He was describing the Tulsa Massacre and the fact that there's some people who lived through it who are still alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have received no reparations. And John Rogers, the CEO of Ariel Investments, went so far as to say, if you think about the compound interest on what was destroyed, you're talking about billions of dollars that was destroyed.
For the Black community, for African Americans. And for us, compound interest is where the money resides. And someone stole where our money resided.
Absolutely. But we're about upliftment.
Yeah.
We're about trying to figure out what we can do now with what we have today.
So I think we have to recap. I think we have to recap the generations. I think we have to recap the terms that we've coined with the research that we've been doing over the last several years, just for the people who might not have listened last week, or for the people who listened, but they were like, that was like 7 days ago, fam. Like, I need an update. I need you to bring me back up to speed on where we are so that they can see where we're going.
I think it's a beautiful framework, by the way. glad we invented it. So yes. Generation negative one is the generation that is destroying wealth in your family.
Right. And so as we talk about these generations, I do want to identify what we are doing is labeling where we are and the people in our family and where they are, not to judge them, but to understand what strategies each level needs in order to make progress to the next generation or to the next level, right? So generation negative one, as you said, this is the person or the people in your family or yourself, if you're being honest, that is currently actively destroying wealth in your family. They've had limited career opportunities, or they typically haven't been able to keep or get a job. Oftentimes they have limited education. They might have been locked up once, several times, long time. Maybe they have some substance abuse issues. And so that's been part of the issue with them being able to get back on their feet. They've got debt problems, but not like your ordinary debt problems, not like a little credit card debt, a little student loan debt, more like payday loans, pawn shops. They're selling stuff all the time so that they can just kind of eat or get by. And they're just completely not financially stable. They 100% have to rely on others. They're always asking if they could borrow $100. Can I borrow a little bit of something to get me something to eat? Can I borrow some money for gas? It's just consistent. They are never in a place where they are able to accommodate for themselves.
That's generation negative one. We also talked about Generation Zero. This is our favorite generation.
Favorite generation.
This is the generation that really is foundational in their ability to create generational wealth for the future generations. They might not be able to create much themselves, but if they can take the lessons that they've learned and demonstrated through their lives and impart them into their children will have an opportunity to build wealth in the future.
Yeah. Oftentimes with Generation Zero, they haven't been able to acquire much wealth just because they haven't had the opportunity. Not because they're not hard workers, not because they don't want more. They have created more than probably what they had, but they've had a limited income, right? Like they are working on a meager salary or an hourly wage all of their lives, right? Mm-hmm. Their kids probably help them with their bills. Like everybody chips in some way, shape, or form just to get by. Again, it's not because they're doing something wrong. They are working hard, but the income that they're able to bring in for the lack of opportunity just isn't that much. But these people have strong values.
Yes.
They really do understand basic financial concepts. They know that hard work pays off. They know if they don't have the cash, then they'll save the money. They're not necessarily going to put themselves in debt. They're not going to put their family in a bad situation. They're very appreciative for everything that they're able to have or pull off for their family. And oftentimes, these are the families that didn't have much, but felt like they had it all, right? Because they had love. They had strong work ethic. You saw somebody in your family doing everything that they could to provide for you. And maybe you didn't have what everyone else had, but you had enough for you to get by, for you to know better, and for you to want to do better. Oftentimes, they might not have much of an inheritance to leave you. So maybe they did buy a house and were able to pay it off, but it's not a real big fancy house. It's probably not in some big fancy neighborhood. Maybe they got a little bit of land to leave you that may not feel like a lot of value to you, but was everything to them. And the big inheritance that you probably did get from them, again, was just family values, love, support, loyalty, hard work, effort, right? Not dollar signs, but the things that can't be bought and the things that can't be taken away from you.
Absolutely. The Generation Zero is the perfect example of the family that grew up poor, but everybody was really tight-knit and they cared about each other and everybody worked hard and believed in themselves and had self-confidence to go out into the world and become something. That's Generation Zero. Generation One is the first generation in your family to actually have the opportunity to create wealth. And this is a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, with Generation One, you're typically the first person in your family to go to college, right? You typically, your income or the job that you have, the career that you have is the most money that anyone has ever made in your family. Like you are finally in a position because you've been granted greater opportunities, whether it's to go to college or to learn a skill or to start a business. You are in a position to make more money than your parents have ever made. You're more financially secure. You know, maybe you're contributing finally to a retirement savings. You're putting money away for your kids' college. You've got money to put away for family vacations. And so you have greater exposure. You're able to help your parents out, maybe some family members out. And you'll probably leave some assets to your children, right? Like you might leave retirement accounts, stocks, brokerage accounts. You probably have a really good life insurance policy that you'll be leaving behind. But your children will be able to really amass a significant amount of wealth, at least significantly more than what has ever been seen in your family prior to.
Yeah. The big challenge for Generation One is that they are kind of on their own. Like generation one doesn't have the ability to go to mom or dad and say, hey, can I borrow $10,000 or $50,000 so I can get on my feet?
Yeah. Also with generation one oftentimes struggles with the education around wealth building, right? So Their parents taught them how to work hard and save and put money aside, but they don't know anything about the market. They don't know about compound interest. They don't know about investing. They don't know about stocks and bonds. It's primarily because the generations that came before them never even got the opportunity to participate in those type of things. So they couldn't educate them because they just didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. So again, as you mentioned, this is a lot of our listeners, especially those who reach out to us and say, listen, I've been putting money aside, I've been working hard, I've been doing all the things that my parents have taught me to do, but they didn't teach me about this. They didn't teach me about the stock market. They didn't teach me about equities. They didn't teach me about, again, compound interest and where the money resides. And so one, it's oftentimes hard for them to believe that this works. Like, you want me to put my money where? With who? But also, there is a big education gap on this next level of wealth creation because no one in their family had the opportunity to do this before.
Yeah. Yeah. These are the folks that are literally like learning from other people.
Our podcast.
Exactly.
Relying on social media a little bit too heavily.
Yeah. It's the friends that are leaning on each other, you know, and I think it's a beautiful thing if somebody is figuring it out in a good way. You know, it's a horrible thing when you see some of the horrible bad advice that we're trying to dispel on our show, because we see some horrible advice on TikTok and different places on social media.
Yeah, excuse my language, but y'all are just making shit up. long story short, like these memes and this advice that's being given out and labeled as financial advice, it's not safe. It's not honest. It's not real. Then you try to get on the phone and tell us that we don't know what we're talking about. Like when we give you the actual truth, you're trying to tell us, oh, you must not know. Or you're not aware, or, you know, you're not willing to keep it real. Like, you could go ahead and try these goofy schemes if you want to, but they're just not legit.
Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate. I'm getting off on a tangent, but you've got to look at the background of the people giving you the advice.
Are they broke is the question. Like, are they broke? And I don't mean what their social media profile looks like. When you show up at their house, when y'all go on vacation, are they counting how many chicken wings they had versus how many wings that you had? You know, are they skipping out on the drinks and only drinking water real heavy? Like, no, seriously, I am a big person that believes you should only take advice from people you are willing to trade places with. If y'all are in the same financial situation, their advice probably ain't all that strong, or their situation would be a lot better than yours.
Ouch. Well, I disagree slightly, because my advisory career started with me advising people that had way more money than me. My first client that I ever landed had $100 million, and they came to me because I had the expertise and the training to help them to pick their investments.
Right. And the two terms you use were expertise and training. I am talking about people who just yet mans in them. Like, they didn't go to school for anything. They don't have, you know, he's your local carpenter, but he's also giving you market advice, but hasn't actually invested just yet.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm talking about those type of people, not the people who've been formally trained, because those are the people we do want you to rely on. But
absolutely,
for some reason, you don't trust them. Right. You trust your homeboy who, again, just borrowed $50 from you last week, but now
to buy a building.
Right. But now he's giving you the finance. This is what you need to do with your money. Yeah. Now.
God bless him, by the way. Like, look, I love that people are aspiring for more. I just wish that people could understand that there's people out here that don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's what we're against.
And when it comes to your money, your wealth creation, what you've worked hard for, what you're supposed to leave to your family, be a bit more discerning in who you listen to. That's all.
Yeah, that's good advice. I can agree on that, Tiffany.
Yeah.
So generation two, this is the first generation in your family to be in a position to benefit from the wealth of their parents.
Right. So they've already acquired some wealth, or will inherit some wealth from their parents already.
Generation two probably got a little help from their parents.
Yeah, or a lot. Or a lot of help from their parents.
Generation two might have gotten the down payment for their home from their parents.
Or money to pay for their wedding.
Mm-hmm. That's a generation two thing.
Maybe generation two, your family, your parents are probably helping pay for your children's education.
Because
they got it.
Yep, that's generation two.
That's generation two. So you're receiving a lot of financial help because of how your parents were able to make good decisions in that generation one. But generation two typically doesn't have to work as hard, right? And what oftentimes gets confused, in my opinion, is when people say, you know, I don't want my kids to have to struggle. I give my kids everything they want because I don't want them to have to struggle. Here's the issue. I agree. We don't want our children to have to struggle, but they still need to work, right? And there's a difference, right? There's a difference in struggling and working. If you do not set your child up to be able to work for the things that they need, they will not be a suitable adult, and they will quickly go from a generation two to a generation negative one.
Yeah, that's a fact.
What we don't want is for this to be cyclical, but it's extremely easy for that to happen when you are a generation two, because you're not passing down those foundational elements that you got from generation zero. You're not teaching them the things that they need to know. You're not pushing work ethic on them, because again, you made it. You got a little money, and so you're able to help out in a lot of ways. And so they don't have to see how hard work pays off, because you know, y'all are going to help me out. Y'all already set me up. I can just kind of chill. This generation two, while is the most advantaged, is the most likely for blowing it.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. I mean, we grew up in the suburbs in New Jersey, and we have a lot of friends who were doing worse than their parents.
Yeah.
Who in some cases took 10 years to get out the house after they finished high school or even college, or if they went to college, you know. And so the goal of this framework is that each generation has to focus on doing a little bit better than their folks.
Yeah.
Not that you are better than your folks, but you've got to try to do a little bit better.
Yeah, the goal is for you to make progress, to mm-hmm. do just more than what the generation before you did, right? Like, that's all we're trying to do. I think you make a really great point. You just want to do better. You are not better than them. You're not, you know, you won't be better than them. You just want to do better so that you can move the needle throughout your family, throughout your culture, throughout your race, for the opportunity to, again, continue to create and amass wealth over time.
Yeah. And also, you've got to understand the obstacles that your grandparents and parents had in building wealth. Like, we talked ad nauseum last week about how from the 1930s to the 1960s, 98% of the mortgages went to white folks. So if you're Black, if you're a minority, you can't get mad at your parents because they probably did the best that they could. If your parents were generation negative one, it doesn't mean you've got to continue that trend.
Right.
If they were generation zero, you've got to now become a generation one. So the focus of today's show and the rest of this show, we're going to focus on how do we move up a generation? Or if you're in a certain level, how do you fortify yourself to really make sure that your kids are being set up to do a little bit better than your parents?
So last week we talked about strategies for the negative ones, and we even talked a little bit about strategies for generation zero. So we're going to go to break, but when we come back, let's recap those really quickly and then really focus on generation one and the strategies for generation two.
I love it.
I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors.
Hi. This is Ghani Rose, Chief Content Editor here at The North Star, encouraging you to check out thenorthstar.com every day for insightful, engaging commentary on the stories that impact our culture. The writers at The North Star make it our mission to advocate, mobilize, agitate, and disrupt in the name of creating liberation-centered content. We unapologetically center the narratives of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. We understand that you can get news from anywhere, so we are more interested in offering perspective that speaks to the experiences of our audience. We write freely and with freedom on our minds. We invite you to indulge in our daily editorials and engage in the dialogue that will change the world. Momentum.
All right, so we are back.
Yes.
Okay, so first things first, let's recap the strategies for generation negative one. We talked about these last week, but I want to make sure they are fresh in everyone's mind. Recognize the mess that you're in. This to me is kind of the hardest part. Like, generation negative one is a bit toxic, typically, right? Yeah. And I'm not trying to hear your criticism, and you ain't about to tell me about myself because you don't know what I've been through, right? So, but if I can get you to recognize, listen, I don't know whose fault it is, but you in some mess. Just acknowledge that your life ain't going well.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the start. Then make the active effort to turn your life around. We're not asking you to become a millionaire, to launch a business. And oftentimes, I think that's what's debilitating for Generation Negative One, because they're like, you want me to be like you, or you want me to be Steve Jobs. Like, whoa, fam. I just need you to pay your own meal.
Yeah.
Just to get off my couch. That's
and stop borrowing money all
that's
the time.
That's it. Like, I'm just trying to get you to a point where you can take care of yourself, not worry about anybody else. Maybe this person needs to get some counseling or go to rehab.
Yeah.
This is a thing, right? Like, drug abuse, all types of issues have plagued all of our communities, right? Mm-hmm. So this is not something to be ashamed of. But if you've had issues with substance abuse of any kind, you might need some professional help. And I know that's not easy, right? Like, going to rehab isn't necessarily free, but you got to figure out how to get off those drugs or stop abusing that alcohol so that you can be clear-headed.
Absolutely.
Then you got to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just a job.
Well.
Now, this seems way easier than it actually is.
Yeah.
Like, get a job, go to work,
okay,
and keep a job.
Ah.
Right?
That last part.
And that's the issue that we see. For the people who know our Generation Negative Ones, we know them. We mm-hmm. love them.
Yeah,
but we know them. They can't keep a job.
Yeah.
Or I ain't had no way to get to work. Yeah. So I had to quit.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they fired me.
Mm. What'd you do? Nobody talks about that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you got to get a job, get to work, and keep a job. We're not asking you to get an MBA. We're not asking you to become an accountant. Maybe you learn a skill, right? And maybe that's just something you pick up along the way. In our families, oftentimes, there's always somebody who know how to fix cars, but ain't go to auto mechanic school,
mm-hmm.
right? They know how to fix the plumbing, but ain't never received no plumber certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you just take that and just go and get a job.
Yeah.
And from there, just get on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, you're living with people. You're getting kicked out at the same time because you're getting on their nerve. You're sleeping on everybody's couch. But get to a place. If you are sleeping on somebody's couch right now, be putting money aside so that you will be able to get on your feet and get your own little place.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be much, but it's enough for you.
Yeah.
Then set the goal of saving some money.
Yeah.
Just because. Like, it doesn't have, what am I saving money for? So you have some.
Mm-hmm.
In case you need it, in case there's an emergency, in case you die. We know you don't have no life insurance, so maybe you can, please don't require people to GoFundMe for your funeral, but having some money saved so that you can just feel a little bit secure,
mm-hmm.
operate like an adult.
Yeah.
And just be the best version of you that you can be.
That's all.
You don't have to try to be nobody else.
Yep.
Just try to, listen, I'm just trying to be me, the best version of me, get on my feet. That's all we're requiring for the Generation Negative Ones.
You can go from a negative one to a zero by just doing those simple things.
Very much so.
Because imagine what your kids will see. If they know that you were bad with money, but now you're on your feet, you can pay your own bills, you can maintain your own apartment or living situation.
And let's keep it a buck. If you're a Generation Negative One, your kids, you're probably on your kids' last nerves. Like, your family, they probably talk about you when you're not around. They don't invite you to the functions because they don't want to have cash on them, or they don't want to have to hide their purse. They don't want you to try to stay over. They don't want you borrowing their sweater and their sneakers. Like, this also allows an opportunity for you to be a more productive and valued part of your family. Again, just by taking care of yourself and not being a burden to others and not bringing your toxic traits into the next generation.
I love it. I love it. So let's talk about some strategies for going from zero to one, right? Because zero might be where you are right now, but you want to get to that point where you are actually building some wealth. And when we say some wealth, like, the average inheritance in the United States is $50,000, right? It's not that you need to become a multimillionaire to become Generation One.
And that inheritance can be, again, in the form of a home,
mm-hmm.
just some good old life insurance,
yep.
Savings account, retirement account, whatever the case is. But again, I think, as you're saying, like, we had to address Generation Negative One because we got to get the toxicity out of our culture, out of our financial progress. Generation Zero is just our foundation. I don't got much. I don't know if I'm ever going to get much, but I'm going to do right by what I got. I'm not a burden to anybody else, and I'm going to try to push the people ahead of me forward the best that I can with the limited that I got. But when you're generation zero, you absolutely want to get to generation one.
Yep. So here's how you do it. So one of the biggest things that you have to do is be conscious about how you're teaching your kids about money. And because they're learning their money habits from you.
And if you don't talk about it, please don't think they're not learning. Like, that's a really big misstep. People don't talk to their kids about money at all because you think it's none of their business or they're too young or it's not their problem. Please know that they are paying attention to you and others around them, and they are learning about money one way or the other.
Yeah, they need to know how to make it, how to handle it,
where it comes from, how to lose it. What happens if you don't have it? I think oftentimes, especially when you're a little kid, you just ask your parents for stuff because they get me stuff every other time. Like, the concept of money might not even come to play. I just know when I ask for stuff, I get it. And mm-hmm. as I get older, that's going to be a problem because you're going to realize, well, I don't have the money to get it, but I need to figure out how to get it anyway because I want it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm used to getting what I want. And so you need to talk to your children early about what money is, how you got it, mm-hmm. where it goes, who deserves to have it, when you can and cannot spend it. Just as a beginning conversation. And as you get older, as you learn things as a parent about money, as you make better decisions financially, or you learn your lessons, make sure you talk to your children about those things.
Absolutely. Kids need to understand that money's not just for spending. It's also for saving and investing in charity. And that's, again, part of the lesson on money for kids. And we'll do a whole show about this. But again, this is a big part of moving up a generation. Next, we'll say you've got to teach your families the success principles that made you financially stable at a minimum.
Right, right. And so that's super important. That's different from money, right? That's work ethic. That's honesty. That's being charitable, helping other people, setting money aside. Whatever it was that worked for you, that kept your head above water, you need to talk to your children about what works. Mm-hmm. Listen, I can only talk to you about what got me here. And maybe I know a little bit more that I wasn't able to tap into, but I'm going to teach you all of that. I'm going to teach you everything that I know about getting to where I've gotten and hopefully how to get a little bit farther when you have your opportunity.
Yeah, part of it's talking. Part of it is showing, right? You got to show them these values. You've got to spend some time with them to make sure that they can see that.
There's so many stories where people are like, you know, when me and my mom or me and my single mom or whatever the situation is, we used to live in this tiny little apartment or we used to stay with my aunt. And then one day we moved out on our own and we had our own place. Or I remember the day when, you know, we bought our first house and I had my own room for the first time, or we had a really good Christmas. And you see that progress, but no one talks to you about how it happened.
Yeah.
No one talks to you about the sacrifices and the hard work that were put in order to make that happen. Those principles that allowed you to make progress are the things that you have to share with your children.
Yeah, when my parents first moved into the house where I grew up, my older brother, who grew up through some of their rougher years, right? The years when they were living, I won't say in poverty, but they were living a lot worse than how they were living by the time they moved into the house where I grew up. My brother, he's like 8 years old, and he's like, pulls my mom to the side. He says, "Mom, where are the roaches and the mice and the rats? When are they coming out? Because this place doesn't have any of that."
Wow.
And my mom is like,
"We left those.
Yeah, we don't have to live like that." And my brother was able to see that progress. And now I think about what his kids are going to see. Like, roaches and rats are so far from their mind.
Right.
But we need to make sure that the kids understand what it took to get there.
Yeah.
And that's what we mean about showing them and talking to them about how progress is made, not just letting them think that, you know, things are sweet.
Also, be their best example, right? Like, we talk about the progress, but when it comes to getting an education, or at least just valuing education, or what your personal values are, or maybe entrepreneurship, or maybe going back to school or learning a new trade or just working your way up in a company. I will tell you, my mom dropped out of high school because she had to take care of her siblings and didn't return to high school. And I am her youngest child, so I'm the last of her three children. Wasn't able to return to high school until she was pregnant with me, right? She was in her 30s when she was able to get her GED.
Wow.
Now, for a woman who didn't get her GED until she was in her 30s, it wasn't very long after that that my mother worked her way up through Frigidaire. We all know appliances. Mm-hmm. Through a company at Frigidaire where she started at the bottom, where she was not only a supervisor, but one of their leading engineers on how to build and develop appliances.
I love it. That's progress.
That's progress. And she set an example that regardless of your circumstance, regardless of where you start, you can work your way up. You can make more money. You can get more authority and leadership and in a real major company.
Absolutely. Next, you've got to make sure that you're not living above your means. Because going back to this idea that your kids are learning from you, they might learn this bad trait from you.
They will definitely learn this bad trait from
you. If you are constantly, I remember my mom one day was telling me that she went to my dad and said, such and such just got a new car. What are you going to do about it? To my dad. My dad's like, I'm not going to do anything about
it. That's not my car.
We've got to make sure that we normalize this idea that we've got to live within our means and our kids need to see that.
I think it's also normalizing that there's nothing wrong with living within your means. There's nothing wrong with just operating in the space that you're at that moment. Because I think what it allows for you to say, this is where I am today, but we're working hard to get to the next place, or we're working hard to get a new car one day if it's something that we need later on down the line. But where I'm at today is fine for us because it's hopefully not where I was. And so I'm grateful that we're here and I know we'll get farther, but where I'm at right now is enough for me and I don't got to keep up with the Joneses.
I love it. While we're on the topic of normalizing things, you've got to normalize the idea of having some money in the bank that's like sitting there for emergencies.
Yeah.
It's very strange for some people when their account gets to $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000. It's strange. Like, we're getting the phone calls. They're saying, look, I've got this $10,000 just sitting there
and
doing
nothing.
And I got
to do something with it.
I got to do something. I know someone even went so far as to say, we heard you on your show say that you shouldn't have $10,000 sitting in the account. You got to do something with it. You got to invest it.
That's a lie.
No, that's not what we said.
We didn't say that.
Somebody else might have told you that. But no, one of the major foundational items of having a smooth surface where you can start to build wealth is having money set aside for emergencies.
Yeah, and it's not doing anything. It's playing defense. You want to get to a place where you feel supported and comfortable that if something happens, I think we could figure it out. We got some money put away. It is horrible when every time you get a flat tire, every time you need an oil change, every time there's something wrong with the roof or the heater went out, you got to call every family member you got and start pulling favors and can I borrow and can I get my check early and can I get an advance? That's not a life that you want to live. Sometimes we have to, but you want to work your way out of it. Having an emergency savings puts you in a place so that, again, when things happen, we're good and we can continue to make progress and we can continue to do the things that we need to do without being thrown off track every single time something doesn't go perfectly right.
We have some great Generation One stories in our client base, like folks that have started businesses and who've really, you know, built themselves up from not much. I won't say from nothing, but from not much. And this is a conversation we're having with them. Like, they never would have imagined that they would get to the point where they could have emergency money set aside. Like, these are folks who know how to deal with an emergency, but never thought about just having some cash sitting aside. We had a client yesterday who said, I might be buying a vacation home one day, like in the next 5 years. I'm like, there was a time you never even thought about that.
Yeah.
We've got to normalize these things and say it's okay to dream about these things and to work towards them. And emergency savings is one of the first things that needs to be normalized.
And even the person who you're telling the story about, this is a woman that we're super proud of who received most of her financial advice from her grandmother.
Yeah.
Right? Her grandmother was probably her generation zero, who imparted lessons in her and imparted the wisdom that she had, although it may have been limited, but the wisdom that she had to help her make financial decisions today, to now to be talking about a vacation home on an island somewhere.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So again, on this notion of I want to be generation one. I might be generation zero today, but I want to be generation one. You've got to manage your credit and your debt. This doesn't mean pay off all your debt immediately as your number one goal.
Y'all be so worried about these student loans. Y'all, these student loans be having y'all worked up. And again, you know I'm worked up about the student loans. But I'm not rushing to pay these people back for something y'all can't take from me. Listen, as Alan mentioned, you have to be mindful of your credit and your debt. Right? Do not bury your head in the sand when it comes to your credit score. Like, I don't know. Last time I checked, it was all right. I think it's pretty good. Like, no, you really want to have a handle on it. You want to know what your credit score is. And if it's not something that's optimal for you, you want to know why. And you want to know what it's going to take to fix it. And when it comes to your debts, you want to know what they are. You want to know how much they are costing you, because debt costs you money. For a lot of these debt collectors, you are where the money resides, okay? And so you want to know how much debt you have, how much it costs you, how much it's holding you back, and you want to have a strategy around it. And your strategy should be, very plainly, pay off the debt that costs you the most money, i.e. has the highest interest rates. So you're worried about paying off your student loan that might have a 2-3% interest rate, but are turning a complete blind eye, Lord, to your Amex that has a 22% interest rate.
Mm. Or your Visa.
Or your Visa.
Or your Discover.
Or your Target card. Or whatever it is. That's not the problem. The problem is the
Macy's
student loan. No, the problem is your consumer debt.
Yeah.
Pay that off. Come up with some sort of strategy. And always just be aware. Just be aware of where your debts are. And again, how much it's costing you, what it's going to take for you to pay them off, and how they fit or how they're taking away from the life that you want to have.
On this note of consumer debt, like, we often, when we counsel folks through building wealth, sometimes people have hundreds of thousands of dollars in investments, but they're still carrying a $10,000 credit card balance. And we just have to explain to them that your investments might be growing at 7 or 8%, but your debt is costing you 20 or 30. So you're losing money on that trade. You've got to get it paid off. Manage it. Like, that means paying it, right? Like, again, this little bit of consumer debt can actually burn a big hole in your wealth building picture.
The next thing you need to do is have some life insurance and some disability insurance. And when we talk about these things, we're not just talking about what your employer provides. Please be clear that your employer has no loyalty to you. So you could be paying into this life insurance policy for 20 years. Pretty much the moment that you are no longer employed with that company, whether they fire you or you quit, you no longer have that life insurance policy. 99% of the time, that is the case. And so you need to have some outside life and disability insurance to know that you are covered no matter where you work, no matter what happens, so that you, again, are able to pass wealth along or make sure you're not a burden to your family. But this is one of those basic safety measures that we've got to get in play.
Yeah, write this down. 10 to 20 times your salary is what you need. Often for folks that are aspiring to be generation one, they don't think about what the worst thing that could happen, which is that, you know,
they die.
And now there's no money for the kids. There's not enough. Like, there might be $200,000, but that might last 4 or 5 years. Like, all the goals that you have for your kids should happen whether you're alive or not. And you've got to have some life insurance just in case.
And people oftentimes freak out when we say 10 to 20 times your income, right? Like, that's $1 million.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's $2 million. Please be clear, when it comes to term insurance, if you get it at a fairly reasonable time, like you're not in your 50s or 60s, it's really reasonable.
Yeah.
It's a really reasonable amount. I got a $1 million term policy, I think when I was 36, I think like 2 years ago, and it was $76 a month.
Yeah.
For $1 million in term coverage.
And that's just in case you don't live long enough to see all your goals come true.
Right. And I ain't got no kids. So yeah. I ain't even got to really worry about anybody else.
You've got godchildren though.
I do.
Who are counting on you.
I hear you, which is why we did this. But what I'm saying is, like, please don't be alarmed by the amount, you know, by the cash benefit. The premiums oftentimes are fairly reasonable.
Absolutely.
So we're going to keep talking about strategies for becoming a generation one. So stick with us. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors. Ooh, it's the pathway to freedom that's needed to the North Star. Star.
Thank you so much for listening to the Momentum Advisors Show. This is Sean King, founder and CEO of the North Star. If you want to hear more shows like this, featuring black and brown voices on the most important issues of the day, head over right now to thenorthstar.com to discover all the podcasts we have to offer. We have over 500 different episodes from 6 different podcast series, and they're all great. Check them out.
We are back.
Yes.
We are talking about how to make progress from generation to generation financially.
Yes.
And the strategies that come with that, and identifying where you came from, identifying where the people in your family started, to figure out where you're going to go next and how you're going to get there.
A lot of the strategies we're giving today, we've given in other episodes, yes, but we're doing it with a little twist today because, again, the focus is really on building generational wealth.
Yeah.
Even if you're not starting from a lot of money.
So the next thing you need to do is to buy some real estate.
Yeah.
Like, buying real estate, even if it's just your own home, the primary residence that you live in, is oftentimes the main foundational wealth building block in most families.
Yeah. And if you did not grow up in a home that your parents owned, you might not be thinking about owning real estate. But one of the biggest financial assets of American families is their home equity.
And I will tell you, as a person, I had no interest in owning my own home. That really wasn't a thing for me. I just didn't like to make a commitment to a particular area. I didn't want to be locked down in some home for 10 to 20 years. Now, eventually, I bought my own home. But I will tell you, I owned investment real estate well before I ever even thought about buying my own primary residence.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. So for people who are like, listen, I like renting. I like apartments. I like to be able to peace out. I like a doorman. I hear you. So maybe it's not your primary residence, but maybe you just own some investment property.
Yeah. But real estate is a big part of wealth building for sure. Next, we want you to understand your net worth. We want you to focus on building it, but also recognize that you've got some intangible assets that need to be developed. What are your talents? What are the things that you're not monetizing that you could? I'm a firm believer, and I think Tiffany would agree, God's given us all talent, and that talent is what can take care of you if you allow it to be the case. We've got to develop these talents and make sure that we're making the most of it. We can often find better career opportunities if we go after things that we love, that we're passionate about, and that we're good at.
100%. Next, think about your grandkids. Now, you might be like, listen, let me worry about the kids that I got. But what we're saying is think big picture.
Yeah.
Think long term. You know, you will likely have some grandkids one day if you have children. Let me just start there.
Yeah,
because I will never have grandchildren.
It'll be hard.
But if you have children, or if you plan or hope to have children, then you will likely have grandchildren. Think about the big picture. And what do you want them to have? What type of life do you want them to have when they're on this earth? What do you want for them? And think about that in the decisions that you're making now,
yeah,
in the information that you're passing down to your children, in the assets that you're passing down to your children, in the lessons that you are passing down to your children. Make sure they are getting these things at that level so that they are then passed on to your grandchildren.
Absolutely. Next, you've got to invest. We've done great shows on this. We've done compound interest, where the money resides. We've talked about inflation and how if you don't invest, inflation is going to eat up the cash that you do have. We've got to, again, get this idea out of our head that investing is something that's incredibly risky and that you're going to lose everything. Like, no, investing is a way to keep up with inflation at a minimum, but also to make some progress, to make your money work for you. The notion of compound interest is that over time, your investments can double or triple if you give it enough time.
Then focus on making some passive income. People are always talking about making money while they sleep. Well, that's passive income. We've done a show on passive income.
Sure did.
So you really have a number of options on what that looks like. And that can look like something different for everybody. For some people, that looks like real estate. I own a real estate property. There's a property manager. I don't really have to go over there, but I know they pay rent and I know I get a little extra on the side. Passive income can look like a number of things. Owning a vending machine. I'm not going to go through the list.
Yeah, we did a whole show on that.
Yeah, 100%. But there is money to be made without any of your ongoing effort, but you've got to put some money in that direction and get it working.
Yeah. Even the stock market, that's passive.
That's major passive income.
Yeah. Next, don't do it alone. I feel like we're just giving like a, an encyclopedia of our shows, but we did a great show on
cooperative economics.
And that's the idea that if you have friends and family who you can confide in, who you can trust, who also have the goal of building wealth, why not do some of it together?
Yeah, they might have the money, you might have the resources, somebody else may have the actual skill to maybe rehab a home or start a business, whatever the case is, but come together with like-minded people. I think that's important, that mm-hmm. you can trust, and figure out how you can build wealth together. That makes it so that you don't have to have it all. Maybe you've got one of the pieces to the puzzle and you can find people who have the other pieces for y'all to get things working.
Yeah. On this notion of building things together, this idea of entrepreneurship needs to be some part of your framework. Like, a lot of us came from parents who worked jobs for their whole lives, and they were able to save and they had great lives. But for other families, entrepreneurship is that asset. It's that thing that can be passed down, because you can't pass your job down. So your kids need to be exposed to entrepreneurship. And so if you can start something, even if it's a side thing, it's a great way to build some wealth that can be passed down to the next generation.
Then when you're doing all this, you're saving, you're passing down entrepreneurship, buying real estate, you've got to make an estate plan. The worst thing that can happen is that you actually build some wealth and then it doesn't make it to the people who you actually want it to go to, right? Yeah. Like, you have to work with someone to come up with an estate plan so that all the things that you have built get passed down to and how you want them to create or to start that legacy that's really important to you.
And the final thing for those who want to be generation one, be optimistic. Like, you've got to believe that you can do it. You've got to believe it. You've got to see it. You've got to normalize this idea that I can break that cycle in my family and actually build some wealth.
Yeah. And I know you said that was the final thing, but for me, the final thing is start now. If you haven't already started, and I don't really care what age you are, like, what your situation is. I think we've given strategies for wherever you are. You could be a crackhead and we are giving you strategies on how to start to make some progress. But start now. If you haven't, I think maybe this ties in with optimism. Believe in yourself enough to begin today. Start wherever you can. You don't have to start with buying a home. Like, start wherever you can. And maybe it's getting some insurance. Maybe it's, you know what, tonight at dinner, I'm gonna talk to my kids about money. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm gonna look at my credit card debt. I'm gonna look at my credit score tonight and just identify where I am. Whatever it is, I think we've given strategies that are both small and large that you can build up to over time, but you absolutely have to get started and you cannot make any more excuses on why you're holding back.
Years ago, one of my best friends and I, we got together and we created a game plan for how we wanted to see our lives develop. We developed a 7-year plan and we said, here are the things we want to accomplish over these next 7 years. And on that list was things like starting a business for me, finishing law school for him, getting an MBA for me, earning a certain salary. When we talked about it, it seemed very far-fetched, but for both of us, it all happened. And what my friend told me recently is he said, I never knew that you could just decide to change your life. I never knew that you could think about a goal and then go and actually do that and not be hamstrung by your circumstance. I just never thought about that. So when we say be optimistic, start now, understand that it's possible, because for so many of us, we have this view that it's not, and it really, really is.
Yeah, and I think we're saying that this isn't in spite of all the obstacles that have happened to our families and that are currently happening to us today, right? We talk about the racial wealth gap, the wealth gap for women, like all the things that are currently happening, they're still happening. Mm-hmm. They are probably going to happen for a very long time. And so what we are saying is that in spite of that, with some of these strategies, with other things, with other resources, with coming together, you can make it happen for yourself. You can be exactly where you want to be. You just have to be willing to do. I think we know so many people who talk about where they want to be in life, what they want out of life, and all they're doing is talking. All they're doing is complaining and sitting there. That's not who this podcast is for. This podcast is for the doers who just need some direction. Like, listen, I'll do it if you tell me what to do. We are telling you what to do. We are helping you identify where you came from. And we're saying, yep, that's our truth. and that mattered for what it mattered for, but I'm ready to move on. I'm mm-hmm. ready to do bigger things for myself and for my children. And I've got some insight. Now, we were not extremely detailed in a number of these things, but I've got some insight on where I need to get started. So let me just put one foot in front of the other and I'll figure it out along the way.
So let's talk about generation two. So this is the generation that will receive some sort of a financial inheritance. And this generation is at the biggest risk of blowing it, right? And so the biggest things that you've got to do, and our list is a lot shorter for generation twos, even though the pressure is the biggest on generation two. Number one, you've got a huge burden to teach your kids about money, more so than any other generation, because now you've got some wealth that could be blown, not just by you, but by them. If they don't understand money, if they don't understand work ethic, if they don't understand how to handle themselves financially, they will take steps backwards.
Yeah. And I know we said this before, but you have to live within your means. Now, your means are probably a little bit more comfortable or mm-hmm. a lot more comfortable yep. than what they were in generations before you. But whatever your means are, right? And you may be one of these Martha's Vineyard is in your means, right? Okay. Maybe a couple of island vacations, a vacation home is within your means, and that's great. But don't go beyond that.
Yeah.
Don't go beyond that trying to chase somebody who's got more means than you, right? Whatever your means are, live within them so that they can feel comfortable knowing that whatever I have is enough. And then lastly, invest for the future. Invest for your future and for your kids' future, right? Like, These are the strategies for generation twos. Like, don't just think about all that you've been given. Think about what you've got to give next. Think about what's next for you, what's required of you, how to pass down this legacy of progress. How are you going to move the needle? Does it just stop with you?
Mm-mm.
That can't be the goal.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't. It absolutely shouldn't. But it can. And in a lot of cases, people who start out pretty well end up way worse because they're not mindful. Like, for a lot of us, we don't have a concept of money, really. Like, if we received a $100,000 inheritance, it might feel like we received $100 million. And before you know it, it's gone.
Yeah.
We've got to make sure that we normalize this idea of saving and investing for the long term and not just thinking about ourselves, thinking about the kids and the grandkids, because that's generational wealth.
Yeah.
Generational wealth is this idea that I'm born and I've got some financial foundation already built for me. Doesn't mean that you're a multimillionaire, but there's some wealth and we want to see that happen continuously from this day forward.
So we hope this conversation has brought a lot of value, a lot of insight, a lot of hope and optimism towards where you've been and where you're going.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to talk about these things. We're going to get more granular in some of these topics, but thanks for sticking with us. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors.